Actually, I'm Johnson's boss, so what do you say? I am very pleased to be here, actually, and I will be learning a lot while I sit in on this session. My name is Frances Spivey Weber. I'm vice chair of the State Water Resources Control Board in California. For those of you who are from out of state, California has a somewhat different system. We have a five-member state water board that oversees both water rights issues as well as water quality policy issues, which function somewhat like laws, and also appeals processes that are associated with water quality. And we have nine regional boards, which for this topic are particularly important. The nine regional boards have independent boards of their own that are usually somewhere between at least or a maximum of nine people. Normally, there are about five, and it is the regional boards that work mostly with the agricultural community for land application of recycled water. One reason that we were asked to be here, Jonathan and now myself, is one, we do use a lot of recycled water in California in terms of land application in agriculture, but probably as important, the State Water Board adopted a policy in February of 2009 on municipal recycled water. And it's not so much that it requires an element that is going to have some impact, perhaps a lot of impact, on agriculture as well. And that is that the policy calls for, over the next 5 to 7 years, the investigation of the groundwater basins in all of California, and essentially a relook at those basins for their salt and nutrient characteristics, and where basin plans need to be amended, adjusted, changed, that will be done over the next 5 to 7 years. And we have done this to some extent in some areas already, which I'll tell about in a few minutes. But it's that relook at the basins and what they have in them already in terms of salts and nutrients and what they can handle in terms of recycled water is an element of this new policy that will have an effect on the farms as well as urban areas that are starting to use more water. I will go through fairly quickly the precise application of recycled water to agriculture in California, exactly how that is done. And then I will have a few words to say about the policy and about some of the things that we are doing to follow up on that policy. First of all, recycled water for irrigated farmlands is under the control, as I mentioned, of the regional water quality boards, nine of them throughout the state. They issue waste discharge requirements, WDRs. They issue individual water recycling requirements, and or they can issue master reclamation permits for multiple projects where applicable. The water quality control plan, the basin plan that I mentioned a few minutes ago, in all of the region boards, all the basins in all of the regional boards, emphasize water reuse. They encourage water reuse, at least in principle, as was mentioned earlier, in with regard to Oregon. The basin plans require that the project proponents first consider reclaiming wastewater before they talk about using potable water. And how seriously this contemplation occurs will vary from area to area. Certainly in the Monterey area over near the Central Coast, they use a tremendous amount of wastewater. They're quite good at it. In other areas, there is less use of recycled water, and there hasn't been much enforcement of this particular requirement in the water code. The Central Valley, which is the Sacramento area, going down to Tulare Lake Basin, if you know California well, and up to the Oregon border, is the largest agricultural area in California. That's one region, and they, of course, do a lot of recycled water in those areas as well. Most of the treated wastewater from municipalities or industrial sources, such as food processing plants, are used for crop irrigation or land disposal in California. And on land disposal, they have to be applied at agronomic rates. The wineries do a lot of that. The water reuse permits are issued by the regional boards in consultation with the Department of Public Health, the California Department of Public Health. And the two agencies work very closely together, not just on agricultural recycled water, but also on industrial and municipal recycled water. Water reuse activities with an agricultural water source are permitted differently in California than activities of the industrial and domestic wastewater sources. The agricultural water source does not require treatment, very much as you heard in Oregon, if it meets the agricultural water quality for reuse, whereas industrial and domestic water sources must meet treatment standards, effluent limitations. If you're using industrial or municipal water, they are limited to certain crop irrigation applications. And certainly the Department of Public Health plays a major role when the industrial or municipal wastewater is used. All of the water reuse permits contain a set of monitoring requirements, and these vary all the way across the map depending on what the situation is. They can vary for facility type, threat to the water quality, treatment type, and constituents of concern, which you'll hear about after my presentation. The reporting frequency can be anywhere from monthly, quarterly, to annually. So it varies tremendously, and it varies with regional boards who are quite independent, and it varies certainly by the crop area. But in California, we are, as I said, not only have we been using recycled water in agriculture as well as in urban areas, but we are now starting to work with recycled water in many, many different areas and are doing a lot of what I consider landmark efforts in this area. One is in looking at recharge of groundwater basins. We've been doing a lot of recharge of groundwater basins in California, and there are two areas in Southern California that have taken the lead. One is Orange County, or in the Inland Empire area that includes Orange County, San Bernardino, and part of LA. And the other is in Orange County itself. In both of those areas, a key element has been the understanding of the groundwater basin and what the limitations are, what the characteristics are. And using the Inland Empire as an example, when the Clean Water Act was first adopted by Congress in the early 1970s, there was a deadline given for establishing what the groundwater limitations were for all the basins, and that deadline, I believe, was 1978. And when that deadline was reached, 1978, where the work had not been done, the best guess was stuck in. Sometimes the best guess was good, and sometimes the best guess was way off. In this particular basin, they had four basins, and they were side by side, two of them side by side. The mountains were at the top and the river was at the bottom. When they actually got in and started looking at their groundwater basins and how they worked, they found that instead of there being four side by side, there were four, but they were parallel to each other, coming from, it makes sense, coming from the mountains down to the river. And they found they had the strictest control on areas that were close to the river and the weakest control in the areas that were close to the mountains. Completely opposite of the way water works, in whether it be on the surface or in groundwater. So they, through essentially it was a seven-year study of an adjudicated basin, four adjudicated basins, they were able to change all the requirements associated with these basins and to identify the hotspots, the places where use of recycled water could improve the quality of the groundwater basins and areas where they should be more careful. That established at a regional level, not at a water district level, a sense of cooperation that had never been experienced in that area before, and it has led to incredible success at getting funding from the federal government, from the state government, and from their own constituents for cleaning up the groundwater basins and putting in desalters, putting in recycled water plants. They're used to sweeten the water. And so it has been a huge success story, which we looked at and incorporated into the state plan for recycled water that we adopted in 2009. The future for this plan, as I say, we got starting in February of 2009, there was 5 years to finish the characterization of the various groundwater basins. This year we will be establishing some guidelines for identifying those that really aren't a big problem, either not a big problem because they are such a problem that there's not much that can be done about it, or they're up at the top of a mountain and they really aren't a major problem. The second is to identify those that are definitely problems that really have a lot of use and are going to need to be there needs to be a lot of extra time spent on them. Those may take up to 7 years. And then there'll be the middle ground basins that are going to be worked on. And the key here is getting this done within the time frame and then getting the basin plan amendments into place. And what this will do, we think, with recycled water, is that it will give the public a sense that the regulators, the applicators, the people who are benefiting from this from recycled water know what they're talking about. Because a lot of the conflict over recycled water comes from people not understanding what's going on, how it's been done, and only hearing usually about the problems with recycled water, and only when forced, because they've run out of water or there's some major problem in the area with potable water, do they move then to recycled water. We're trying to get in front of that and provide the planning elements that are essential to give the public a sense that recycled water, that we understand what we're applying the recycled water to, we understand the basins, we understand what is going on. And in that, we will also be calling for monitoring, which is going to be increasingly important. And in the state of California, I don't know how it is in the other states, but in the state of California, we have a very, very poor idea of what kind of water we use. We simply don't report on water use as we will need to in the future if we're really going to be planning and integrating water based on our understanding of where we're using it. So in November of 2009, the legislature passed a law, or several laws actually, and the governor signed them. And one of the requirements in those water laws was that there should be reporting on water use, and this will be required reporting on water use, potable water use, reporting on recycled water use, reporting on stormwater capture and use, and reporting on conservation. So we have a much better sense at the statewide level as to exactly what we're doing where. It's extremely hard to plan, and it's extremely hard to know what to require people to do if you don't know what they're doing already. And it seems very simple, but we have done a very poor job of that. Fortunately, the capacity to gather this information electronically is much greater now than it was, and so we will be adopting reporting requirements for but at the end of this year and early next year. In addition, as I mentioned earlier, the State Water Board is also in charge of water rights. And one of the items that was mentioned earlier is that some people are afraid to use recycled water for fear that if they give up their water, that someone else will get it and misuse it. So why not just not let your potable water get away from you? We have a system where if you do report conservation measures and recycled water measures, you will not lose your water right, but you have to report. And so another piece of the legislation that was passed in November of 2009 does require for water rights use reporting. How are you using the water for which you have a right? And it was voluntary. It could be done, it wasn't voluntary, but it had to be done, but it could be done electronically or with paper this year. That didn't work, as you might imagine. So we are going to, on Tuesday, tomorrow, consider a requirement that all reporting be done electronically, which I expect will occur. And finally, I'd like to, recycled water policy that we adopted calls for a study of constituents of emerging concerns. And we put a nationwide panel together that looked at constituents of emerging concern. You're going to hear more about them in the next presentation. But the gist of it is that they came up with a very small number, actually, of constituents that we know enough to say these should be monitored. One of them was coffee. You know, that's going to be a challenge. There were several others. There was a hormone treatment and some other things that were identified. But what we found was not so much that there was a small number that are a problem, but there's a small number that we know about that are a problem. And so how are we going to deal with that? The one of the recommendations that we've chosen to emphasize is that looking at testing in testing in sort of larger clumps of constituents, so that we are looking at the we're able to go out and do testing of waters for a wide range of constituents of concern, rather than chemical by chemical by chemical, because that will always be behind if we do it that way. So you'll hear more about the CECs in a few minutes, and if you have any questions, I could try to answer. Yes, sir. I'm asked to repeat the question. The question is, when someone is fined by a regional water board for violation of exceeding some number or some requirement, fines are collected, and where do they go? Actually, probably the easiest thing to do would be to check on our website, the State Water Board. We have you can get in and look at the budget, and in general, the money goes into pots that are used for cleanup and abatement in the future. They're used for water quality related activities. Sometimes they are used locally on projects that are identified by the regional board as high priority for improving water quality at the regional board level. So it will vary. It's not necessarily that if you collect the fine at point A, the money gets used at point A, but some portion of it often does get used in the region as a whole, and then some will go, if it does go to the state, it stays confined. It doesn't get used by increasing salaries, and then can be applied to statewide priorities or problems. And more, we really try to stay ahead of the problems that might occur, so that we have money to deal with them when they occur. Yes, sir. We have what we call an ag waiver program that has got started several years ago and is particularly exemplary in the Central Valley, where we have most of our farmers. And the ag waiver program is really not a waiver of having to do things, but being able to work together collectively in groups to do things. And so the ag waiver program started with everyone having to sign up. That was the requirement. And then those that didn't sign up, you know, would perhaps suffer the consequences, but they would be monitored perhaps more tightly. Secondly, and we're moving into this phase now, they do a lot of monitoring to find out where the problems are in the collective, not just at the individual farm level, but as a whole. And that's what's moving into the future. They start changing the way in which they are operating with their applications of various pesticides or nutrients or whatever. And we're finding that actually over time, there is, as with the urban areas, there is a partnership that is formed. And it becomes not so much the regulator coming in and telling you what to do, but it's working together to try to come up with solutions. And it's in that group that I think we will get more application of recycled water, because the group will be used to working with each other, they'll be able to share information. So I think the Ag Waiver Program has been a success. It's a success in progress, and not all regions are equal in terms of how well they've done it, but Region 5 in Central Valley has done a fabulous job. Thank you.
Thank you, Francis.